Hello and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast with myself, your host, Jordan Jarrett. Brian, this week on the pod, we'll be talking about Spurs and whether they might have hit their ceiling under Pochettino with a tough few games ahead of them, potentially in the Champions League, and a really poor run of form in the league. We'll go through some Wolves chats as well. Also, Raheem Sterling, really good article in done by Rory Smith on the Man City winger. We'll be discussing him too. And we'll be getting Neil from the Anfield Wrap on to talk about Liverpool's run-in as well. This week on the podcast, I'm joined by a couple of Spurs fans. Troy and Ollie, gentlemen, what are we saying?
Oi, oi.
Yo, yo, yo.
You good?
All good.
Happy days, happy days. And we've also got Chelsea fan near G. A little bit less buoyant, but what are you saying?
Outnumbered.
I'm always in a good mood.
Despite a 2-0 loss at Everton, but we'll allow you this week on
you
that
know,
one.
We focus on the Europa League. That's
You soon switch. Right, let's get into the show, guys. First of all, some drive-by. You know the rules by now. You have 60 seconds. I will be cutting you off on 59 if you get that far, so please bear that in mind. And you cannot be interrupted by anybody else on the panel. Troy.
Always me
Let's
first.
Start with you, man.
No
let's
matter come, whenever I come on.
Let's come to you first. And I've got a nice question for you. In the Ronaldo-Messi debate, week when they both scored hat-tricks of brilliance for different reasons, when we look back on both these players' career, will the dial shift towards Ronaldo because he's done it in multiple leagues?
No. Listen, I don't think we should be comparing the two.
And
anyway.
I was just going to say, you can't start your answer with, why are we comparing these two? Why can't we just enjoy these two geniuses?
No.
Okay,
I just
good,
said no.
Good, okay.
I think ultimately, when Messi finishes his career, people will see his brilliance over what Ronaldo has contributed to the game. And although you're right, some people say he's taken the cheap option to go to Juve, who already win their Italian league hands down every year anyway. But what we saw last week was a guy who, no matter what club he's at, drives that club on. Messi is just out of his world with what he does, how he his approach to the game, the goals that he scores are just on an absolutely different level. There is this argument about not doing it for his national, you know, for the country. But I still think because he's easier on the eye, Messi will take all the plaudits away from Ronaldo regardless.
Nice. Ollie.
Yes.
Is there anyone from any of the three teams likely to go down this year, Fulham, Cardiff or Huddersfield, who's good enough to be bought by a Premier League side next year?
To be bought? Sorry, what do you mean?
Is there a player from any of those three teams?
You want me to answer?
Oh, a player?
A player, yeah.
Oh, right, sorry, a player. I thought you said the clubs.
No.
A player from Huddersfield, Cardiff or...
Fulham.
Fulham, you'd have to look at, yeah. I can't think of anyone from Huddersfield or Cardiff, but Fulham, obviously, Sessegnon's the one that everyone looked at. He hasn't had a great season.
Do you think he's done enough to get bought by a Premier League
club? That's not the point. The point is that he's not really had a chance to shine in a team that struggled from the first minute of the season. So there's no doubt that there's talent there, but he struggled in that side. They bought in too many players at the start of the season, essentially, and they've not really settled at any point. So, yeah, he would be someone. I would have thought Mitrovic might interest a few people. He can score a goal. He's a bit crazy, but yeah, I think he's got something about him. So I would say Fulham, but I can't really think of anyone at Huddersfield that, or Cardiff that really has shone at any point.
Fair point.
Solbamba's better than Van Dijk. There's
no interruption. It's not your question, so please just leave it alone. We've moved on. Here's your question now, G. Wan-Bissaka isn't in Gareth Southgate's squad. Considering the competition that he's got at right back, is that the right decision or is it an understandable one?
No, I thought they would have given him a chance. You know, even, I mean, Luke Shaw pulled out today. I know they're not exactly in the same position, but sometimes you swap a fullback for a fullback, and they swapped a fullback for Hudson-Odoi, which I was happy they gave Hudson-Odoi a chance because I think, you know, I think he's going to be a good prospect. But I think Wan-Bissaka's been playing every week this year, and he's done really well. And even towards the end of last season, he was doing really well as well. So now I think he should have had a chance. I think there have been people who have done less than him that have had chances of being brought into squads, like Maddison, for example. Well, I like Maddison, but I think he's done more than
but
him.
But I picked
well.
Him specifically because he's not been better than Trent Alexander-Arnold this year.
Yeah.
Trippier not had a great year, but he obviously is trusted by Southgate because of what he did in the World Cup.
Yeah.
And I'm never been a Walker fan, never have, still not. But has he been better than Walker this year?
Jeez.
There are some stats which say that I think it was something around him being one
most
of the
tackles
best,
or something.
Best tackles. I mean, listen, I mean, he's performed well. I'm not going to go out on a limb and say that he's been better than all of those guys, but he has performed well. But what I think the reason why I say he should be in is because Southgate has been known for giving people a chance or just getting people in and around the squad.
Okay, that's your time.
And he's got a lot of people. Thank you very much.
All right, so let's move on to the pod now, guys.
That's such a great question. I can't believe that you're moving on from that. But anyway, let's go.
Well, okay, yeah. let's briefly extend it then. Because I picked him because everyone was saying he should be in the squad. But then when I broke it down, I thought, because I'm not a Walker fan, but do you drop Walker from the squad for him? Trippier, he trusts. And he's not been better than Trent Alexander-Arnold. So I just thought it's unfair because he's been good. But
he's been on a par with Trent Alexander, but you wouldn't appreciate it because he plays for Crystal Palace and Trent plays for Liverpool.
Maybe.
He's been better than Kyle Walker, hands down. And he's been better than Kieran Trippier,
so
hands down.
So you would drop Walker from the squad to bring him in?
We said Walker or Trippier. Trippier's gone for me. He's injured anyway.
Oh, wow, gone.
And he's gone. He's not been performing at any level at all this season. Spurs fans will know that anyway.
Absolutely.
Wan-Bissaka has been outstanding from the minute he walked into that Crystal Palace setup and started playing at that level. The quality of player he's had to deal with, he's done it very, very well. And his standards haven't dropped. You know, yes, he's had the odd game where you think, but his standard hasn't dropped.
He deserves
to be in it. If you're talking about players who have had a season like he has, while some players are in there because of 20 minutes of football since December, then he deserves to be in that squad. Full stop.
Okay. Let's start. We're moving on. Let's start, gentlemen, with our first topic of the show. If Spurs don't win the Champions League and slip out of the top four this season, has Pochettino hit the ceiling with Spurs? I'll start with you, Gabriel, as the non-Spurs person on the panel today. If they miss out on top four this year, they don't win the Champions League, does it feel to you like he's maybe squeezed the most he can out of that team and club?
I wouldn't say so. I just think you would say that was a bad season by his usually high standards. I still think there are things that he could achieve. He seems to play it down, but he could win a trophy, and that team is more than capable of winning the trophy. I wonder if people like the Man United job might have, or the Man United job coming up might have turned his head slightly. And because there has been a lot of strange behaviour kind of since that's come up, and I think that has kind of coincided slightly with the drop in form. But yeah, no, I don't think he's reached the ceiling yet. I still think there is more that they can do. There, of course, everyone knows there is a ceiling at Spurs, but I don't think he has reached that yet.
Ollie, who do you watch them every week? Who for you, if Spurs do finish out of the top four, should shoulder the bulk of the blame? The players, the manager, or the board?
Well, I think you would have to. I think they'd all have to take it equally, to be honest with you, and that's not a cop out. The fact is that, you know, Pochettino has made it quite clear that he didn't need any more players. He's happy with the squad he's got. But if they don't deliver, then he's got it wrong, hasn't he?
Do you believe that? You know, or was that maybe a party line, a club line?
Whether it's a party line or not, he said it. So, you know, it doesn't matter whether I believe it or not. You don't have to come out with it. If you don't believe it, don't say it. You know, he's in a strong...
No, but it's not the point of a party line. You do have to say it. If the club is saying,
we need
you to come out there and put out the narrative that we're happy with what we've got.
He absolutely doesn't, because he's in a strong position. This is a guy, Jordan, who's put Spurs in the Champions League 3 years running. He doesn't have to say anything. He doesn't have to say anything like that. Why does he have to come out and toe the party line and say, if that was the case... Mm. Why would he have to do that? He's in a very strong position there. So I don't see why he'd be forced into it. He said it because he believes it. He actually believes that I don't need the players because I've got these players here. But if the players don't deliver for him, then it's an oversight on his part that he didn't actually... I mean, you know, the last time I was in, I said all this stuff before, Jordan. The fact is, at the start of the season, it was quite... evident, it would have been quite easy to foresee the problems that they would have in the first few months of the season, i.e. that you have a lot of players at the World Cup coming back, and then they went straight into the season without a rest. you know, you can't really, and you've watched Spurs over the course of this season, they've had to grind out a lot of wins. Mm. They haven't really been that impressive over the course of the season. So you're grinding out wins, and people are saying, oh, this is great, you know, we're doing really well considering, and it is great, but it's commendable that they've managed to stay in there. But the thing is that with a bit of foresight, you would have been able to look at that and say, you know what, even if we don't think that these players are going to be, you know, our number one players, we do need to pad this squad out because some of these players are coming back from the World Cup. We're going to have a situation here. We need to get a few more bodies in. I understand they've got the issue as well with foreign players and whatever they can't sign. Mm-hmm. But irrespective of that, you need to move players on. And this is where the Levy thing becomes a problem, because Levy will never move someone on unless he gets what he thinks is the right price.
Top dollar.
Sometimes you've got to just move people on and just say, cut your losses and say, you know what, we need to get some players in. We need you to go. You know, the whole thing with Dembele, farce. What was that all about?
I'm going to come to players in just a moment and bring you in, Troy. If next year it is Europa League football for you guys, would that be a massive setback for the Spurs project in terms of him trying to win, as he always says, one of the big two trophies, because that would mean one of them you can't win next year, and then going for the league, considering I reckon he'll try and win the Europa League, makes winning the league that much harder.
Can't contemplate Europa League football, and there's a couple of things why. One is because of Spurs have overachieved. I don't care what anyone's telling me, they've overachieved to be where they are at this present state. Europa League financially is no good for Spurs. The new stadium's getting open in a couple of weeks' time. You know what it was like for Arsenal when the Emirates was open. Mm-hmm. Wenger had to guarantee Champions League football just to make sure that the coffers were staying at the top heel. If Spurs do not get Champions League this year, that severely hinders the fact of who they buy and who they sell. One, you don't get the quality of player in. Two, the players themselves, do they want to be playing Europa League football? Although I agree with Ollie, a lot of this is their fault, the players' fault. Certain players who you would expect to step up to the plate when other players are not around haven't done that. But I disagree a little bit on the fact that that message, you know, at the end of the season, when you start this season, you know you've had a long World Cup. You know that the season you're on four competitions. You cannot do that on zero signings. And Spurs fans are mad. You know, one minute it's, we didn't need anyone anyway. Look who we've just beaten. The next minute is, it's because he's not signed anybody. That's the thing. They're so confused with their messages that one minute it's great, the next minute, it would have disrupted the squad anyway. You know, I could go through a number of the Spurs players that have not have been consistent this season. But ultimately, why have they not been consistent? Because they had a run in the World Cup that no one expected, and they haven't had that break. That's when you need the quality of backup that we haven't had to sustain a challenge for the league. Two, you got to remember the cup competitions. Did we treat them really in the respect that we should have done? Apart from the Champions League, and that was only at last knock-ins. Now we're proving that we can win games in the Champions League, but the next round is gonna really show whether we go further in that competition. I'm always of the opinion that you get something in the bank. You get a competition in the bank to show players the bigger side of the project. Players want to win trophies. Players want to be playing at the highest levels. Players want, you know, to go home and say, you know what, we've achieved.
They want to win.
Full stop.
So
if you want to win, you don't go to Tottenham, though, do you?
Well, I'm with you, but for the purpose of the debate, let's be sensible and try and keep it, you know what I mean, proper sort of thing. So you said at the start that you don't think he has hit a ceiling.
Yeah.
With the stadium that Troy mentions, and seeing very few clubs move to a new stadium, and
can
do
I just
better,
say though, very sorry to interrupt your question, and you know, that I'm not saying he's right on this, but Levy has said that the whole plan or the whole project is not predicated on them being in the Champions League. He's basically said that, you know, even if they're out of the...
Do you believe that?
Whether you want to believe
that. Do you
that
believe
not,
that?
Personally, I don't think it matters either way, because I'm with Troy. I think that irrespective of the money side of it, the prestige and where the club wants to be, the idea, you know, the perception of the club, you can't be playing Europa League. You can't be going into a new ground like that. All this fanfare, all this talk about...
And entertaining teams from Timbuktu.
Yeah, you can't, you know, that's to me, irrespective of the money angle, it's not a given. And bearing in mind, they were 10 points clear, a couple of weeks ago. They've blown that lead. They've gone from Pochettino saying, oh, well, you know, this Burnley game is a cup final, to now looking over their shoulder and Arsenal are a point behind. Mm. So something's gone seriously wrong there, do you know what I mean? You can't... And some of it is Pochettino's fault because he says the wrong thing. Sometimes he talks too much when he doesn't need to say anything. Mm. Just say nothing. Don't go into the Burnley game, start talking about, oh, well, this is a cup final. And no, it's not Pochettino. It's just a game. Go into the game like you've gone every other game and try and win it and try and get the 3 points. Don't start boosting it up to the players.
The pressure that Burnley gained, that's the last time Burnley won a game of football,
I was just going to ask, are you upset, though, that he treated it as a cup final, or the fact that he publicly said it's a cup final?
I just think that he...
Because in some ways it was a cup final. If they'd have won that game, you'd have been how many points behind?
Why is it a cup final?
You'd have been two
points. Burnley at Turf Moor.
Don't forget the team you're playing. The three points you've got.
You didn't need to say that, Jordan.
So what I'm trying to say is, do you think it's him saying it a problem, or is him thinking it a problem?
No, him saying it. He doesn't need to offer that in a press conference. He doesn't need to say that, Jordan. If you've got a question mark about your players and their ability
to get over the line
and to deal with high pressure situations, why put more pressure on them by saying it's a cup final? Always remember the way that Ranieri was in that season Leicester won the league.
Played it down.
He spent the whole season saying, nah, we just want to get 40
points. But Leicester
points.
Can do that.
Tottenham can't do that. He can to a point, Jordan, but the point is he said it up until a point where he did change come February time or whatever when he thought, hold on a minute, we could win this.
Yeah.
Then he started changing and saying, yeah, you know, and he was up for it. But the first half of the season, he didn't say anything like that. He just said, we're just getting 40 points. Pochettino didn't need to say that because it wasn't as if we win that game, we go top. We were winning that game. If we win that game, we go 2 points behind and we're in touching distance of top. So he didn't need to say that. It was always going to be a hard game against Burnley. It was always going to be difficult. Mm. Just go into that game and just say, it's going to be tough. We know what we're up against Burnley, but, you know, we're going to give it everything and blah de blah de blah. You know the cliches, you know what I mean? He could have said all that, but he didn't. He built it up too much and all of a sudden...
But look at the fallout from that game as well.
Absolutely.
It wasn't just the 3 points. You know, so he's got a two-match ban. Listen... I'm telling you, Mike Dean said something to him that rolled him and the rest of his management squad.
You know what he said as well.
Yeah,
Trent.
I know what he said. You know what he said.
Well, you know, if you'd have done your game properly, you wouldn't have lost.
Well, apparently he said you've blown it now.
Yeah, but that has a massive impact because no one's ever seen the whole. By the way, all of the Tottenham staff should have been banned that day. Little Perez putting his finger right.
He was the worst.
But ultimately, that sign was the pressure. Losing it at that point. Do you know what? Deal with it inside. Yeah, you got something to say? Let's go and talk inside, me and you. Mm. But he did that in public. You know what I mean? With the whole stadium, with the cameras, everyone saw it. And yes, I probably would have done it as well because Mike Dean gets right in between your bits of your teeth that nothing should. But ultimately, I think that was a day when people said, Spurs are gone.
So with the way he handled that press situation, and I agree, he did slightly crack fall apart under the pressure of whatever Dean said to him. With that... with the stadium next year that we think will curtail their progress next year, being in the Europa League potentially as well, and no
you're
players
actually defining Spurs' season before the season's even started.
I said if. Are you telling me that not finishing in the top four is not a viable possibility?
Not finishing in the top four. Not with the teams that are in fifth and sixth at the moment.
You think you're more likely than less likely.
In the top four.
Oh, you're going for it.
Spurs
you're saying
will finish
Spurs
in the top
will.
Four.
Are you that confident?
We're not as bad as those teams outside.
I think they'll finish in the top four.
You think or they will?
I think they will.
I'm telling you, Spurs will finish in the top four.
Okay,
remember
so you've gone
you
for
it first.
I think they will. Yeah, yeah. I think
you
they
think
will.
They will or
I
they
think
will.
They will finish in the top
He's
four.
Saying they will. Do you think they will or they
and,
will?
And he's pointing at you as well, Ollie. He's pointing at you as well.
He means it. Sorry, really, he really means it.
That's your spot here, man. Wow.
Spurs will finish in the top four.
Why are you so confident?
Because the other teams are shocking. So they will pick up enough points to finish in the top four. Right.
Yeah. I will say that, you know, the one thing Spurs have got on their side, not because they will take kind of control of the situation and get through, but the other teams are...
You don't trust them.
Look at Chelsea yesterday. Oh, look at them.
How do we
not just yesterday, but look at them. Yeah. They've had two chances now to make up ground
on
Spurs.
They could blow it and you could still finish at the top four.
Listen, They've had two chances, yeah, to make up ground on Spurs. Wolves at home and yesterday. Mm. They've blown them both. Yeah, they're still 4 points behind.
And
yeah?
Arsenal and still, had that
and they've still
chance.
Got to go to Liverpool, and they've still got to go to Man United, yeah?
Forget Chelsea. So
Arsenal as well.
Arsenal.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow, you're done.
Arsenal, you know, they've done well. They've come back into it. But Arsenal lose games away from home. Mm. I want back Arsenal.
Aubameyang scores that penalty. We talk differently.
Well,
now.
I said that before the game. So if we beat Spurs today, we'll
catch
them.
It's a different kettle of fish.
But, yeah, I agree with that.
But
I
didn't, you know, whatever happened.
And I wonder with United whether the Solskjaer bounce has gone now. You know, it may well have gone. Yeah. The two big defeats ever since the PSG game. They've gone, haven't they?
The wheels
they've
come gone.
They have. But what can I just say?
The wheels crashed.
Can I just?
He's not on the wheel anymore, is he?
He's not on the wheel anymore. No, he's driven the car off the road into a tree.
But do you know what that might ignite?
What?
That because let's be serious. Everyone thought Solskjaer nailed on. Yeah, look at what he's done. They're nailed on. They're now in the Champions League. They didn't expect PSG to batter them. That might ignite their interest back in Pochettino.
Yeah, but
I think it should.
I think they've blown it now. I think they've blown it because there've been so many things coming out of the club now that Pochettino would have looked at all that and thought, you know what, that's not for me.
That
now.
Doesn't because, stop them know, from still being interested.
Oh no, I think they'll be interested if the wheels fall off with Solskjaer before the end of the season.
They've only got three on there at the moment. They, so what are they going to do?
Then wow. I definitely think that they will be interested again, but I think Pochettino will, because he's been disrespected a bit, hasn't he? Because the whole Solskjaer, we don't need him, we don't want him, because you know we got Ollie knows Man United, he knows what it's into.
I don't think he was going there anyway, personally. But
can I just say about this whole has he reached the ceiling thing? Can I just say with that, the thing with Poch is not so much has he reached the ceiling? Yeah, yes, obviously we want to be in the top four. If we can go as far as we can in Champions League, be great, yeah? But the thing is with Poch, it's not about reaching a ceiling of if he doesn't win this or he doesn't win that. The thing is, he needs to prove, as Troy alluded to a minute ago, he needs to prove that in the big games, right, he can get his team over the line. That's where he needs to get to a point where it's like, it's not, and it, to me personally, it's not, I of course I want to see him finish in the top four, but I also want to see him win a game, a big game where it matters. Like the 31st of March is a big game. They need to win that game. They need to win, or certainly not lose.
Liverpool
away. Okay. They need to go to Liverpool away and put a performance down. Not the normal go to Liverpool and be behind after 10 minutes. You know, they need to go to Liverpool and do something. They need to go to, you know, into this Champions League quarter final against Man City and do something. This is what I'm talking about with Poch. It isn't about, oh yeah, you know, it's about this is it now, Jordan. Yeah. He's won a few games, right? He's won a few games against the big boys, but at the wrong end of the season. Mm. I'm talking about now. This time of the season where it's like March, April, May, and it's like this is where things are decided.
It's when it matters, yeah.
He needs to do something now and show this is me now. I can get a team over the line. He's got two big opportunities. Well, sorry, he's got four opportunities. He's got Liverpool. He's got two games against City in the Champions League, and then he's got City away in the league. Those four games are massive for him. He needs to show what he can do.
Couple quick ones. If Eriksen leaves, how you don't think he'll go?
Let him go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah?
Let him go.
Go on, why?
Because in the end,
you got the best years out of him.
He's had a long stretch at Spurs. He's been a great player, but the thing is, if he wants to go, they should let him go and they should move on. And you know, and the other thing about has Poch reached the ceiling? I think some of the squad have reached the ceiling. I think these players, they had their big chance in that season where Leicester won the league, and they didn't get over the line. You know, the thing is that they need to freshen it up. There's no doubt in my mind. They need to freshen it up. They need to get some of these players out for the players might think, oh, we are want to move on. It's good for the club to move these players on, because it gets to a point with certain players where it's like,
my thing is maybe he's too loyal to those players.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we can pick Tottenham teams all day long. You know, if he really wants to.
And so could he operate.
Yeah, and I think he's juggled at times when he shouldn't have juggled. So, you know, the time when the fullbacks maybe should have remained the same, but because you've got four, you juggle them. The central midfield kind of picks itself. The forward line definitely picks itself. Mm. And I think that's where you're right. He's been a little bit too loyal, and maybe
Scottsdale.
Get a couple out, it's not easy because you're not bringing people in, but maybe if you up your transfer fee, Ollie's right, Levy will not sell people for market value. He wants more than that, and maybe that brings more funds into the club.
Final quick one as well. Just want to get your opinion on this. Eric Dyer last week tweeted about people's vote. As a Spurs fan, do you guys have any particular opinions or views on whether your players should... I mean, forget whether you agree with the tweet or not in terms of what his viewpoint... But are you for football players?
Players have a powerful voice now. Players have a powerful voice that maybe should be used a little bit more.
I thought he had tonsillitis.
That's why I tweeted.
Listen, I haven't got a problem with players using their platforms, and I've spoken to a number of players to know that their platform is their platform. And if they want to add to any topic at present stage, the power of the player, particularly the Premier League player now, means that they're a voice that's going to be heard. So whether I agree or not, I'd be happy if they spoke up a little bit more about issues within the game. But you know, we'll talk about that at another stage.
I'm sure we will. Let's move on, guys. Let's talk a little bit about Wolves. And to do so, I want to bring in Rai from the Wolves Fancast. Rai, how you doing, sir?
Yeah, really well. How about yourself?
We're good, mate. We're all good. First of all, well done for Saturday. Up the Wolves.
Thank
good
you.
Job. Well done.
I can't take the credit for it, but thank
just,
you.
Just take it. Just take it. Just take it. were you really good or were United really poor?
Well, this is the thing. I think the narrative you often hear in the media is that United were poor. I think, you know, we've played a few sides this year and I think, you know, we've done well against the top sides, which has been well talked about. And I think, yeah, it can be a little bit frustrating from a Wolves fan perspective when you kind of get the credit and the shine taken off you a little bit when it's more about how they haven't kind of turned up. But I thought we were very good. Yeah, okay. You know, if you look from a United perspective, you know, Pogba and you know wasn't really kind of at the races, and there are a few of us. But I think we kind of executed the plan. We kept things quiet, and then second half we played the classic as what is kind of. Been Wolves' story this season, counter attack really, and with him and Nez and Hotter, we were fantastic. So no, I think we deserved the praise we got. I thought we were excellent on the weekend.
I agree. You've got some good players, Ryan, like Neves and Moutinho, Dendonka, Jota, who all had good reputations or who had been previously good at previous clubs. But is the job that Espirito Santo has done that's really, really deserves a bit more praise is that you've got players like Doherty, Cody and Bolly who haven't previously had great reputations or played at this level, and he's managed to get those sorts of players playing beyond their abilities.
And I think that's exactly right. And you know, I was talking to someone the other day about Fulham, for example, and the money that they've spent. And, you know, in comparison to us, I know, as you rightly say, the players that we've brought in, as you mentioned, initially have got the credentials and they talk about Mendes and so forth. But, you know, you mentioned Cody. I mean, this is a guy who, he was in and out the side a couple of years ago, to be honest. He was a centre midfielder. We picked him up from Huddersfield for £2 million and he wasn't getting in the side. And then he's suddenly not playing, you know, he's playing this sweeper role and really it's been unfortunate not to get the England call-up. Doc as well, Doherty, you know, from the McCarthy days, he's been brought in. He cost us £75,000. Ryan Bennett's been in the side recently. He was released by Norwich because he was deemed not good enough. So, you know, when we talk about the players and who we want to keep, the main person to keep at this football club is Nuno, because everything revolves around him. And he's the biggest asset, I feel, that we've got at the club.
Assuming you do get top seven or win the FA Cup, I always kind of, when teams significantly overachieve, wonder about the following season. Are you guys, is the expectation going to be so high that if he doesn't finish 10th next season, that, you know, he's under pressure? How do you maintain a second season and not get that, what they call second season syndrome?
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? And I think that's the thing, because I think, you know, should we finish, for example, this season, you know, 10th or 11th, and then the following season, you know, finish where we may expect to finish this season, it's a little bit different. But if you kind of take a back seat or kind of show signs of not maintaining that, and I think like Burnley have done it, for example, but I'll be honest, and I'm not sounding arrogant here, I just think we're going to go from strength to strength, because we've got the finance there. You know, I accept the fact that perhaps you can kind of give us a little bit of grace in terms of people figuring us out and other teams might push on. But I've got no reason to believe we'll push on. I mean, he went through a sticky patch at the start of the season where we lost against Huddersfield. And, you know, we're all fans and we can be a little bit fickle at times. So if he does go on a bad run, but I think when you look at what he's done for us, I think he'll be given that time. And I can only see us really going in an upwards direction, to be honest.
Listen, right, we'll get you back on the pod if you get to the FA Cup final, and I hope you do. At the start of every season, I always take a 40-yard shot and make a big prediction. My prediction this season was that Wolves would get European football, and everybody, I think you were on that panel as well, laughed at me.
No, I agree with you.
You sure?
They laughed at you.
Everyone laughed at me. So you're making me look very, very good. Good luck in the semi-final, mate.
No problem. Pleasure, guys.
Cheers, mate. Take care, man.
Bye-bye.
Nice one.
I mean, Jordan, up the Wolves. What's that about, man?
Huh?
Up the Wolves?
Yeah, man. I like Wolves. And they beat Unite on the weekend. So they're doing well. Anyone that beats United is a friend of mine. Right, gents. Let's move on to Sterling. We're going to focus a bit more on Man City maybe next week, because I wanted to have a Man City on the pod to talk about their season generally. But we'll do them another time. Let's focus on Raheem Sterling. Start with you, Ollie. On form, is he currently the best winger in Europe?
You're not going to like my answer, John.
It's not whether I like it or not. Just be honest with me.
I mean, he's very effective.
But I know what you're going to say.
I know what you're going to say. I don't like these questions, Jordan. I don't like these sort of questions is someone the best of this, best of that? Who's the best in Europe? It's like, he's very effective. But I don't like those questions. B, I just don't know. Who's he up against? I don't know who.
I was going to say, when I posed the question, I did research the competition, and there aren't many out and out wingers or wide men anymore. So the pool is small, to be fair.
When I was thinking about it, I was thinking, well, who's out there? Who in Europe, across Europe, who would you say? I mean, you know, I don't really know. I mean, even your boy and Saha, are they wingers? Or are they players who come inside a lot
forwards
and look to... You know, there's no one who's doing...
You're right.
The days of Stanley Matthews and all that sort of stuff are over.
Oh, right. Back to Stanley Matthews, you know.
Not even Duff and Robbie, you know. Stanley Matthews. Jesus Christ, Ali. You could have gone back 10 years.
I'm talking about you.
You had to go back 5.
I
went back 65.
I do the originals. I do the originals. I'm thinking about people who jink about, you know, jinking and beating people and all that sort of stuff. No one does that anymore.
I'll tell you what, I'll ask you a question as well. One, I know that it would piss you off. But secondly, and I've worked out to trigger Ollie now as well. Certain guests are now to trigger. But secondly, about two seasons ago, I remember you saying we did a show about Sterling, and I think it was just after he'd been signed, and you made the point about the fact that he was at a team with big stars, big egos, and the other players would look around the dressing room and look at Sterling and think, you're a bit out of place here. And I'm wondering, A, do you still agree with that? And secondly, has it reversed in the sense of maybe he now is the star and the kind of go-to player in that team?
I wouldn't go
you
that
really
far.
Said that 2 years ago?
George's on his research, right?
That's why it was two seasons ago.
And I kind of agree with him. That's why I remember it.
What I'm thinking is that at that point, Sterling had gone to Man City. No one could actually understand why he'd gone to Man City, because A, there was no guarantee he was going to play every week, whereas at Liverpool, he was in the team every game. Yeah, went to Man City and probably went to Man City. Listen, in the fullness of time, right, we've realised since then what really happened. He got signed by Guardiola, right? Guardiola was basically saying, I want De Bruyne, I want Sterling. We didn't know that at the time, yeah? So it's different. It's like he had a plan in place, and I think that he wanted particular players, and he went out and got them. Pellegrini was the manager, but only in name only. So Pellegrini probably knew that his time was up. Pellegrini weren't managing Sterling. Mm. Sterling was looking like a fish out of water. Now he's got Guardiola there. Guardiola's helped
his career. I think
used
that phrase in that pod as well. You know, if my memory serves me right. Josh, play the clip, please.
Wow.
Troy, yeah. I've got here 21 goals in 46 games for City and England this year. he's a title winner, World Cup semi-finalist, Nations League semi-finalist, and could this year win a quadruple.
Are you really telling me he's semi-finalist, which is putting down on a CV?
I'm just saying so. Oh, the World Cup for the Nations League.
Nations League semi-finalist.
Well, you know, so? That's what he is at the moment. I'm trying to give him some props here. I know that you've always been a Sterling fan. Is he the go-to guy in that team now, or are there still other players in that team that you think are the guys?
Listen,
rank him for me. Rank him.
He's one of the, without doubt, his improvement over the last couple of seasons under Pep, and he's transitioned him as a player. He's not a winger. So you saying, is he the best winger around? It doesn't matter because he's not a winger. He changes his game. His movement is first class. His finishing has got better. We're talking about him for the reasons that what he's done so well. He is one of the go-to players. He's the player that gets rested when they don't need him. He's the player that comes on when they're in trouble. That is a go-to player, you know. But we're talking about amongst the Silvers and the Agueros and the Jesus and De Bruyne's. Mm. So actually, they've got a changing room full of go-to players. But Ollie's right when he said, you know, you look around now and he's a man now. He's a man. Mm. That's how I'd like to describe him. When he went there, he was a young lad trying to find his way in the game. He's a man now. He steps up to the plate. There's no criticism. Well, there still will be criticism of his England performances. I don't think he's put on the platform he deserves by people that write about the game. But he is definitely one of the players. Well, he is. He should be with a shout of the player of the year.
We'll get to that in a second.
Right, okay,
I think Ollie's point is interesting because it shows in the 2 years the growth he's made, because I think 2 years then, I think the big names in that team would have been looking at Sterling a little bit like, what are you doing here? Whereas now, listen, I think he's on that par with De Bruyne, Sane.
Do you
know what I mean?
As potential.
Yeah.
No doubt. Yeah. He's signed as potential that was yet to be fulfilled. Mm-hmm. Coming to Man City, you either fulfill it or, you know what, mm-hmm. see you later, we'll mm-hmm. bring someone else in. And he's fulfilled it, and some.
Can I just remind you as well, what I said the other week, when we were talking the other week about Sanchez, yeah, and why Sanchez has suddenly gone crap.
Good decisions.
It's about, you come to a team, the team signs you with a specific idea in mind about how you're going to fit into that team. The manager wants you, and the manager puts you into the team and knows how he's going to play you and develops you. That is what it's all about. Sanchez never had that. Sanchez was bought for all the wrong reasons, as I said the other week. Mm. He was bought because they didn't want him to go to Man City, and they thought, oh, he's available, just get him. But then they bought him, and it's like, so what do we do now?
But there was a
plan
for Sterling.
But Sterling, Guardiola has a plan for Sterling. He's always had a plan for him. He always wanted him. He wanted him in his team, just like he wanted De Bruyne. And if you've got a manager who's behind you like that, then you can go a long way, especially if the manager's as good as Pep.
Gabriel, I know that you were a massive critic of Raheem Sterling. No, there's no moonwalking now. You were a big critic of it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm putting it on them.
I wasn't a big critic. I was a fan, and then I thought, I'll be honest, in the first season of Pep, I did feel that his performances were being slightly overblown, because I still felt he missed quite a few chances, and I did feel that there were times where he was peripheral on the game, where he would get on the end of things, but there were the De Bruyne's and the Agueros were the key men. But I think this season, he really has stepped up, and I've ate my humble pie. I've said he actually is, you know, he's one of the go-to guys now. Going on to what the guys have said as well, I respect him as a man. All that has happened this year, and it hasn't affected his performances at all. Like, you actually look at Leroy Sané.
If anything, he's got better.
Exactly. Leroy Sané, I would say, I'm not sure ability-wise who's better at the two.
I think on talent, it's not even close. Sané is much better.
That's what I'm saying. And I think Sané had a bit of problems at the beginning of the season, with the World Cup, with the Germany squad and all that, and his head went, you know? And Sterling has stepped up. I remember Carragher, when the whole that racism debate came out, Carragher said that for the Sterling that he knew in the dressing room was a mouse, and he couldn't imagine him talking out of turn to no one. This guy is no longer a mouse. Yeah. This guy is a giant.
That's crap, though, because the Sterling he knew was a young boy.
Yeah.
Who actually looked around the changing room and felt, it's not my place to talk up. The Sterling who he's talking to now is a man who has his own opinion. And remember, a lot of the stuff is about him. Yeah. So he's got his own opinion on how people are discussing his, not even his future, his body. Yeah. Or the attacks that have happened on him. Yeah. And he's done it in such a precise... He's been... Listen, Raheem Sterling has been managed really, really well. Really well. Because you know what? He could have come out on the attack. He could have been the angry black player one, you know, the one that we all hear.
Yeah.
But he's come out and he's measured, and the team behind the team has to be applauded in the way that they've approached the, you know, the situation, like you said, have happened this season.
Absolutely.
You know, so I think all credit to the lad.
Sure, are you talking about his management team? Are you talking about
his manager? His management team. So the team behind Raheem Sterling, the agent and the people behind that.
Right.
But you've got to give a high five to Pep as well.
Who came in for a lot of criticism,
of
didn't he?
When he left for money.
That's the only reason why anyone leaves Liverpool or Arsenal.
Shut up. No, but he left to better his career. Who's questioning him now? Nobody.
100%.
So you mentioned Player of the Year contender.
Yeah.
I think it seems the two obvious standout contenders at the moment are him and Virgil van Dijk. I've heard from some journalists say that he should win the Player of the Year, not only because he's done well on the pitch, but because, as you've all mentioned here, his conduct off the pitch and what he's done in terms of advancing a very serious social message that goes beyond football. Now, I'm wondering, A, do you think that should be factored in? We'll start with that one. Do you think that should be factored in when deciding who the Player of the Year is?
What are we talking about? The player's player or the football writer's player?
Because
the player's player should be on the talent and the ability.
And that's it.
I don't think it's just those two.
Are they the leading two, though?
Well, I don't know. Are they? I don't know. That's what people are saying. Van Dijk, yes. You know, you've seen the impact he's had in that Liverpool team, and you can see why Pep wanted him at Man City. He's the natural successor to Vincent Kompany, full stop. But obviously Liverpool have got him and he's proved his worth, apart from what happened yesterday. Raheem Sterling, is he the best attacking player in the Premier League at the moment? I would say he's one of the... Full stop, he's one of the...
But for the journalist writer, the football writers, should that be factored in?
Personally, no. Has it been factored in before? I don't think it has. Personally, I think you go on who is the best player this season on that football pitch. If you want to give Raheem Sterling an award for... First of all, football has to recognise what's happened to him, by the way.
True, yeah.
But if you want to give him an award for what he's done or acknowledge what he's done, do it at the time. Do it at the time that the lad has been racially abused. Don't wait and say, your conduct this season has been brilliant. And if that's the way, we escalate these issues into the public domain. So if he gets the Football Writers Award and you're telling me that's one of the reasons why, then I have no respect for those football writers.
Do you guys agree that should be just dismissed completely, the conduct off the pitch and the way that he's carried himself socially?
I think it's one of those asterisks that gets mentioned if you win the award based on what you do on the pitch. So when you win the award, and then you say, and he did blah, blah, blah. But I don't think it should be
considered when voting.
No, because it's about what you've done on the pitch.
Okay.
I think it should always be about what you've done on the pitch.
Okay, so flip it. Let's say his conduct off the pitch was awful, but he was killing it on the pitch. Would you equally say no, that shouldn't be factored
in
as well?
He should still win. If he was the best player of the year, he should win. The best player should win the Player of the Year. Hands down, that should be the end.
Unless his conduct has led to him having an 8-match ban or something.
Well, I was going to say, maybe not that far, but let's say it was a white player and this player was killing it all season but had been involved in some race row outside of the pitch and it was public news, it was front page news. Do we factor that in when deciding he's the best player in the league?
Now you're touching to an arm motion, though, aren't you?
I'm just trying to mention the way are we being consistent here?
That's ultimately, what we're saying is the player of the year should be because you voted him as the player of the year.
Because
of what happens on the pitch.
Yeah.
If individuals then decide to take it into the other arena, that's up to individuals. But listen, and I get where you're going because they are role models and it does actually
I'm not sure that they necessarily are, but let me just...
Footballers. Footballers are role models, whether you like it or not. They can be good ones, they can be bad ones, they could be indifferent ones.
Well,
they're role models.
Let me just get Ollie's view.
Who was saying the other day that footballers aren't role models? I can't remember who it was now. Someone was saying something, but go on, sorry.
But I was going to say the same question. If Raheem Sterling had said something on social media... I hate all Indian people. I don't like them. Da, 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 da. And it was like, whoa.
This is a stretch.
I'm pushing.
Ryan's
but let's just flip it and say that his views were the opposite of what his views have been in our favour.
Yeah.
Would that make you think, whoa, yeah, no. He's clearly a racist, despite he's got 45 goals this season, he's won the Premier League. Does that come into your thinking if you were voting for the player of the year?
That's too extreme. That's too extreme. Jay.
All right,
maybe
not. I hate Indians, but maybe I don't know. It's too extreme, if he was subtle, in his views on social media that was anti another race or ethnicity, would that be considered?
Okay, what about if I say Jordan? I wouldn't vote for him, but if he won it on the merit, I wouldn't be mad. I just wouldn't vote for him.
But you know what? There'd be an uproar. Okay. There'd be an uproar. I think there'd be people who go, "How can you vote for him? And how can you make him the player of the year because of?" But there'll be people going on the football pitch. My man is, by the way, Luis Suarez. Just throwing him out there.
Yeah.
Known racist, yeah? What Elfrey does, eat skin for fun and all that stuff.
Oh, wow.
Signed for Barcelona. They didn't care, did they? Mm. They didn't care about Luis Suarez, the
person.
Individual.
Yeah, yeah.
They worried about Luis Suarez, the footballer, and bought him on the back of him and his ability to play football.
Okay.
Same can be said of Cantona.
I was thinking Cantona as well, actually. Yeah.
I want to go back to a period of time that listeners might remember. We probably
won't. let's give it a go. Just very quickly. I got someone on the line. Go on.
No. I'm just saying. I wanted to go. That man, Eric Cantona and Stanley Matthews, and that. I just want the listeners to think about football now in this generation.
Pre-2000. Yeah, I hear you. All right, let's move on, guys. Let's talk Liverpool. I want to find out what.
Sorry.
Can I move on, please? We got a guest waiting.
Sorry.
I want to talk Liverpool, and I want to talk about the title running, and I want to find out what we think Liverpool. What would be the difference from now to the end of the season in Liverpool being successful and to do so? I want to bring in Neil, our good friend here from the Anfield Wrap. Neil, how you doing, sir?
Good evening. Good evening, Jordan. Good evening, everyone.
You got Troy, Ollie and Gabriel here. Let's get into it straight away now. What do you think? It's looking very tight, Neil. It's going to go to the last couple of games. It's looking that way. What do you think between now and the end of the season will ultimately be the difference in who wins the title?
I think from a Liverpool point of view, it's if Liverpool can score 3 goals a game. I think if Liverpool score 3 goals a game between now and the end of the season, they will win the title. They will certainly win every game they play. Liverpool have only conceded more than once 3 times this season, against Burnley, against Crystal Palace and against Manchester City. They won 2 of those games as well, I hasten to add, because they scored 4 in 2 of them, and I think that that's the difference maker. I don't think there's a team that we're going to come up against, unless Eden Hazard or Harry Kane have an absolute blinder on the day, and Hazard's record at Anfield is terrific. But I don't think there's a side we're going to come up against who are going to be capable of scoring more than 2 against Liverpool. So Liverpool's mindset, outlook has got to be, can they score at the least 2, if not 3 goals a game between now and the end of the season? And if Liverpool do that, I do believe Liverpool will be champions.
Be honest, on the weekend against Fulham, when Fulham got that equaliser, Ryan Babel, did your whole season flash past your eyes? Or did you genuinely believe that we got, what was it, 10 minutes, 15 minutes left, we will get the winner?
I thought it was a nice time. If it's 10 minutes earlier, everyone acts as though they've got ages. If it's 10 minutes later, you really haven't got very long at all and it becomes very anxious. So it was about the best time they could have got that goal, to be honest with you. I was worried about the game. I've been worried about Fulham for a while. I've been worried about Fulham for a couple of weeks. Coming off the back of Bayern Munich away, the fact that Fulham, I've seen a bit of them this season and they're actually all right. They're better than the worst. They've been worse than the sum of their parts, but at some sort of point that was going to stop a little bit, and I think you saw a bit of that against us. So I've been worried about it for a while. When they got that goal, I just thought, this is not the place I want this to stop. I don't want to lose this here. I don't want to lose this today. And we didn't. You know, ultimately, it was... So that was what was worrying me more than anything else. The idea of losing it to a side who were 19th, the idea of that being the end of the affair... would have just been awful, and it would have felt like the end of the affair. I actually think it's different now. I think if Tottenham come to Anfield and get a point, it'll still feel salvageable from that sort of stage. But the idea of, you know, of it happening against Fulham, I think it would have been a body blow for everybody.
I was going to ask, I don't want to get all Sky Sports on you, but did that feel like a moment in the season?
The penalty, yeah, it does. The getting the win does feel like a moment in the season. I think you underestimate, you know, Liverpool ended up making beating Bayern Munich look easy. It wasn't easy. It was a huge effort of mental and physical will for Liverpool to beat Bayern Munich, and it was a terrific performance, and they take it out of you. So it was massive, and I think you saw that with the reaction. You know, there's the little shot of when Milner scores the penalty, Mane drops to his knees behind him. when the final whistle goes, Trent Alexander-Arnold goes absolutely berserk. All of it, you know, suggests that they got through something there. And I do think it will be a big moment if they get over the line. But they've been serious like this all season, Liverpool. This is not a one-off. Mm. You know, I think Liverpool's entire title sort of challenge can be defined by exactly how serious they were. For instance, away at Leicester back in September. So, you know, when they got 2-1, I wasn't surprised to see them see it out. I wasn't surprised to see them see it out at 2-1 either, rather than 3-1. I just think that the thing that Liverpool need to do, as I say, is if Liverpool score the requisite goals between now and the end of the campaign, then City will have to be perfect to stop them.
I want to ask you about Alisson, Neil, because he was my one to watch this season, because obviously it's been well known. You've needed a good goalkeeper for a while. You brought in this top keeper from Roma. I still don't know how good he is. I know that there was a mix-up between him and Van Dijk, of which I actually blame it more on Van Dijk than Alisson. But how good has Alisson been? Because he doesn't seem to have been spectacular, but bar a couple of incidents where he's kind of maybe overplayed, he doesn't seem to have done anything wrong, but you're there every week. How good is he?
He's terrific. what him and Van Dijk do is they just offer themselves, one another, and everybody else a sense of absolute calm. And when I'm talking about that seriousness of purpose, that's also what's been in there for Liverpool at the back. You know, look at the reaction to the mistake at the weekend. Alisson and Van Dijk then go on and have a faultless 15 minutes. And having watched Liverpool goalkeepers in the past manage to veer from crisis to crisis within the first 20 minutes, that tells you a lot, I think, about the quality of the player. And the same goes for Van Dijk in that instance. You know, the best thing about them in many senses is actually the price tag. We can't get better than these lads. We've currently got the best goalkeeper we can possibly get. We've got the best centre-half we can possibly get, and I'd say we've got the best centre-half in the world. And I think that's a massive thing that Alisson has brought, this idea of, I am Liverpool's number one goalkeeper. Last season, when we made the Champions League finals, the first half of the season, the manager was rotating between Mignolet and Karius for league and Champions League. He's not doing that this season. Mignolet doesn't get a look in. Alisson plays every game because he is the best goalkeeper we can possibly get. And that's what he's offered, and that's what he's brought. And he's so good with his feet. He pushes the defence out. It looks so much easier to play at the back for Liverpool with him there. He's made some spectacular saves. He makes a great save against Burnley, for instance, away at Burnley when we beat them 3-1, where he makes a terrific save, catches the ball, and launches it on the counter that we then go on and score from, all in one move. So he has made big saves. They've just not probably looked like big saves because Liverpool actually haven't had that many big wins. One of the oddities of this season is that Liverpool have, you know, our first proper away win that felt like a thing was the one at Bayern. We beat Spurs early in the season, but the first one that really felt like a statement away win was away at Bayern, and yet here we are, top of the table, 2 points clear of this brilliant Manchester City side. So there have been big saves, they're just not necessarily coming games that felt like big games.
I hear you. And just finally, Neil, I'm assuming Van Dijk will win your player of the year, possibly the player of the year for the league. But who's a close second out of Alexander-Arnold and Sadio Mane this year for you guys? Who's been more effective of those two players for you?
Of those two, it's Mane. I mean, there's an argument that Alexander-Arnold hasn't been the best fullback at the club this season. Robertson's been absolutely tremendous. Alexander-Arnold's come on leaps and bounds, and I think his development's actually been a little bit overlooked. He's much better with his left foot. He cuts inside much more, and he's going to be a tremendous player for Liverpool for the rest of his career. But I think Mane has been underrated. Effectively, Mane has, from the 1st of January 2018, when we go to Burnley, we win 2-1 and Mane opened the scoring. There's a really strong argument that even through the second half of last season and coming into this one, since that date, Mane has been Liverpool's best attacker. Not Firmino, who's been tremendous, not even Salah, who scored all those goals, but that actually Liverpool's best attacker has been Sadio Mane. And right now, that's the case, and you're able to look at the goals and say, yeah, he's got 11 and 11, but that was the case the first half through this season as well. He's one of the cleverest footballers I have ever seen. It's remarkable. I mean, he's embarrassed two goalkeepers in the last 4 weeks whilst not looking at either of them.
Well, he's done well, he's done well. Just before I let you go, I've got two Spurs fans here and a Chelsea fan, and you guys have both got to go to Anfield, is that right? Just briefly, Gabriel, how big a game for you do you think that will end up being? I know it's not for a little while, but how big a game...
Well, if history repeats itself, we'll stop them from winning the league. So it's got to be a big game.
Not stopping anybody from winning any league. Not that Chelsea team that I saw yesterday.
Do you fear, Gabriel, that you, when you by that stage, it might be you might be in a really stretch
it, it, it could
form.
Be that by that stage that the Europa League becomes our focus, which would be pretty sad if it does, but that could be the situation. But I think we the way the club is and rivalry is probably too strong, but the disdain between the two clubs means that we'll have to go up there and try to get a result.
Mm.
So I think we will put some pressure on them for that, in that title race.
Ollie, how your game isn't there for a while as well, but how big a game?
It's the end of the month.
The end of the month?
Yeah.
Okay, so how big a game do you think that will be for both clubs?
Absolutely huge. Huge for Liverpool, because every game is huge for Liverpool if you're going for the title, of course. But it's huge for Spurs as well now, because they've made it huge because they've dropped so many points. So it's absolutely huge, because if they lose Liverpool, then, you know, Arsenal could go ahead of them. So, you know, whereas a few weeks ago you could be saying to yourself, well, you know, go to Liverpool and get a draw, be a good result. Now you're looking at it and saying, well, Spurs, you really need to... You need to try and win. Mm. You need to try and win. And again, if we go back to the Pochettino conversation we had a little bit, then he needs to, and Troy mentioned this, he needs to look at that game and think to himself, well, actually, you know what? I need to...
A statement win.
He needs to stop trusting in the four players that he trusts at every game. It's too obvious what Spurs do in every game. And you look at what Liverpool have got. Liverpool have got, you know, three guys in the midfield who never stop running. They never stop working. They never stop moving. And, you know, it must be a dream for someone like Van Dijk. I mean, people talk about Van Dijk and how good he is. But if you've got three players in your midfield who work as hard as they do and never give the opposition a chance to do anything, then, you know, it makes it a lot easier for the defenders behind them. But Spurs, you can't be going into games like that against Liverpool away, knowing what Liverpool can do to you. You can't be going into that game looking at it thinking, you know what, I'm going to go with my same tried and trusted Eriksen, Ali, Kane, Son. You can't do that. You've got to look at that and say, one of those guys has got to drop out of the team. One of them's got to drop out, because otherwise it's going to be the same story for Spurs. They're going to go up there and get beat.
I hear you. Neil, cheers for your time, bruv. Thank you very much.
No problem at all.
Cheers, mate. Take care. So, guys, just briefly, on the title run-in, just find a word from all three of you. Start of you, Troy. A, who will win the league? And as I asked Neil at the start there, what do you think the difference will be? Not points-wise, but what do you think will make the difference for the team that does win the league?
I'll tell you what.
We didn't discuss Europe as well, actually. So,
yeah, no, it'd be interesting to see how all the players come back from the international break. This is the international break where a couple of injuries get picked up, where a couple of people don't come back in the way, because that's why the managers hate it at this period of time. They just hate it because the player doesn't come back the way that you'd given him out. So it'll be interesting to see how they come back that. I've still got Man City to win it. You know, I watched Liverpool yesterday, and that's not the Liverpool we've seen for a good period of time. Mm. There's a nervousness about Liverpool now, and they have a apparent star man in Mo Salah that's not functioning with the rest of the team at all. Mm. And he looks actually...
He's still contributing. He's not scoring, but he is. If you look at their games, he is still getting assists and he's still contributing.
I watched Mo Salah yesterday and he looked like a selfish individual that was on this tip to get his 50th goal. Mm. And he ignored certain situations that he hasn't done previously. And I tell you how much is, for me, is I'm going to take him out of my fantasy team. So that tells you a thing you need to know, because I like to win.
You know what's funny? As you were saying that, I was thinking...
I was thinking, why is he still in your fantasy team?
Okay, so then you agree with me. You agree with me. Because you always believe that Mo Salah, all right, he'll come back up, he'll get the goals or whatever. But Mane is now so dominant out of that Liverpool trio, that untouchable trio, that, you know, it's so noticeable now that Mo Salah's, not deterioration, but whatever is going... Because I'm being honest with you, he doesn't look like a happy footballer to me. He doesn't look like the footballer that was scoring the goals that he was last season.
I don't think he's got over that Champions League final. That
might be a really, really good shout.
I think that's really still in his mind.
But
I think he's really upset that after that season,
yeah,
he couldn't even just finish the final, whether they win or lose it. But yeah, I think that's the only, and then the World Cup, he kind of labored through that. I think that's still on his mind.
Do you think it's a bit of the way Liverpool have changed the way they've played slightly, and he's not used in exactly the same way he was used last year?
But he has still, to be fair, got 15 goals. Yeah, it's just that we're judging him against maybe last year.
But 15 goals is still ridiculous. Yeah, but we're judging on his contribution as well. And like I said, Fulham yesterday, Liverpool Sports will be able to tell you more than me. But the fact they're saying Mane has been outstanding, the fact Firmino, you know, and I don't think Firmino's been the same, but his contribution seems to be more than Salah.
No, it's not, though. I don't think it
seems to be.
Okay.
More
okay.
than Salah. Okay. I'm just, like, the Salah of last season, I would have backed him to score goals in any game that he started.
But that's kind of my point. I think the fact that he was so superhuman last year is making us look at him a bit harsh this year, because he's still got 15 goals and a decent amount of assists. Are we just still thinking he's not scoring every game, therefore he's not doing very, very well?
I think there's something in what G's saying, that they have changed the way they've played. They're not playing the same way they were last season, which was just, you know, 100 mile an hour football.
But that's good.
Getting the ball forward as quickly as possible. They're not doing that anymore. But you also have to take into account that when you have an effect that he had last season,
teams work you out
and teams are just doubling up, which then makes more space for someone like Mane to do his thing. Because don't forget, Mane was the one last season everyone was saying, he's been completely overshadowed by Salah. Now Mane's come into it when Salah's kind of dipped a bit. So
I looked at that front three yesterday and last season, and thought how well they interacted with each other, how they used to bring each other into the game, how when one was free you'd always find him. I didn't see that. And I'm not just basing it on one performance against Fulham, but I see that quite a lot with Mo Salah, having watched him a number of times this season.
But I hear that quite a bit from a lot of people. And just kind of go back to Ollie's point, doesn't the fact that they've clearly tweaked their system and they're not all firing like last year, the upside, though, is that they've conceded significantly less goals. And I think the Klopp thought, this gung-ho thing isn't working.
Yeah, I agree with
that. So we've got to tweak it, and it might mean we're less exciting going forward, but we're going to let in less goals at the back. And look where they are in the league
now. I'm not talking about less exciting. I'm talking about a man whose contribution last... Listen, it's always going to be difficult to repeat what you did the season before. But like I said, he doesn't look like a happy footballer. He may be, that might be his persona around the football pitch, but it definitely wasn't last season. So I'm sticking with Man City.
You're going with City?
I'm sticking with City because I think they've got just a little bit more and a better squad to tackle the end of the season.
Ollie, City or Liverpool?
City.
Why?
Because I just think they've got that little bit more quality, and I also think that they've kind of got a bit more experience in terms of getting over the line. I go with what Troy says to some degree. I do think there's a bit of nervousness there with Liverpool, which is why I actually do think that Spurs have got a chance in a couple of weeks if they tweak their own system a bit. They've got a chance, because I think if Spurs go up there and they put in a performance and they match Liverpool's work rate, Liverpool, the nerves will be jangling there. The nerves will be jangling massively for Liverpool. They know they can't afford to lose any game. Mm. So, you know, I mean, your man was saying a minute ago about draws. You can't even draw, really. Mm. Mm. Not with a team like Man City in the mix. You've got to win every game. So their nerves will be jangling. For Spurs, they got to just go there and try and stay in the game as long as possible. You concede early and you're in big trouble. So, yeah, I think Liverpool got a lot of games where they could trip up. Chelsea could cause them trouble.
Nah.
You know.
Just very briefly, City or Liverpool, and how big a role do you think Europe will play in this final stretch?
City for me. I don't think Europe will play a bigger role for one or the other, aside from the fact that I think City have got the better overall squad. I think the key thing for me is that Liverpool seem to be wobbling and just not firing at all cylinders, whereas City seem to be having momentum at the right time.
Okay.
So City for me.
Thank you very much, Gabriel, Troy, Ollie. Cheers for your time this week on the pod. Do not forget to subscribe to the podcast. You know how to do by now. Leave us a comment, retweet, share, tell your friends. We are on all the socials, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Until next week, peace.